What is up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Mr. Jonathan Blau. He is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Fusion Family Wealth. We had a great conversation that, of course, started with two truths and a lie, moved into talking about when and how we can actually find headspace and get our heads clear of all the stuff that we are constantly processing. We talked about the differences between data, knowledge, and wisdom. We talked a lot about behavioral finance and had a conversation about finding what is enough for you. Talked about the danger, which we all know, of focusing too much on external things versus actually figuring out what is it that makes us happy and fulfilled and all of that good stuff. And then closed with an awesome dynamite difference making tip. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Jonathan, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please, sir.
Yes, sir. All right, George. So, I am an old soul. My wife always calls me Miami John since the time she met me at 25, because I always relate well to people who are almost a generation ahead of me, better than I had to the people of my generation. And I think that's one of the reasons I've been able to be successful as a wealth advisor, because when I started in the business at 26 to 29 different roles, I needed to relate to those people and have them relate to me, because no one my age had money to give me to help them with. So that's one truth. I was brought up in a very privileged environment where I was lived on a yacht for 3 months of the year, and I couldn't afford that same thing now. So we are avid boaters, but we have just a 34-foot kind of day boat that we take around and enjoy. I've tried not to expose my kids to the things I was exposed to growing up, because I think I had to fight them and learn to learn the other side of things to be able to help people the right way. And then what else can I tell you? I think that's it. You know, the avid boater, that was the third thing.
I like it. I like it. So Miami John, you're an old soul, grew up yachting. But today we are on a smaller boat, but that's still a wonderful thing. And is it love of the water? Is it just, what is it about boating that you like so much?
It's the one time I find that I can, it's cathartic. You know, I'm always thinking of what I love to do professionally, which is the work with the psychology relating to decision making and all that. And I'm always reading and studying and thinking. And when I go out on the boat, it's the only time I'm kind of not really feeling handcuffed to all of that. And it's even the only time when if I get a call from a client, I might wait 2 hours before I return it until I get off of the water. So the boating is kind of cathartic for me. It's almost like an escape.
Yeah. You know, it's every time I get the opportunity to be by water, I just can't help. I just sort of zone out and stare off at it. If I'm at the beach, I can stare into the water forever. And I don't do that much boating, but what you just described sounds like something I would really get into. So
yeah, no, it's nice. So I love the water though, in general. Like we had a bigger boat that we used to travel with our family every summer to Nantucket and Montauk and Newport, Rhode Island. And we got rid of that a few years ago and bought a home in Montauk for the summer. And I go on my deck, even if I'm working, I have 180 degree views of the water. And same thing, even if I'm working, I feel relaxed over there.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I like it. I like it, sir. Well, aside from thinking about being an old soul and getting out on the water, what is top of mind for you right now?
Top of mind. So it's interesting. One of the things that I can't escape, even though I don't like to talk about it with friends or clients, is politics. So what's top of mind today is to tell everybody, with everything that's gone on, let's all accept what's happened, whether we like it or don't like it, and just move away from the whole political upheaval and rhetoric and all that stuff, because life goes on. And the in my world, in the professional world, It's still a week doesn't go by where somebody doesn't ask me, a client or somebody else. So, what do you think the mar what do you think this regime is going to mean for the economy, for the markets, et cetera? And so, I encourage people not to try to focus too much on whatever the regime we have in place, whether you like it or you don't like it, or want it or didn't want it, the markets in the next 10 years likely would have ended up exactly where they will be, whether the person you liked or didn't like got it. That's the whole history if we look back to 1936. So just let all that politics go.
Just let it go, people. Go, go,
Let it go.
go, go stare at the water instead.
Let, yeah, don't I always say don't worry about things that you can't control. That's almost like paying interest on a loan you might never take. You wouldn't do that. Don't do this either.
Yeah, I think that that's a healthy way to think about it. And accepting what is, we can be irritated with it or be celebratory about whatever. These things
Right.
happened and it is what it is. That's
And
not easy.
they've always happened, right? They've always happened and they always will happen. And
Yeah.
so history teaches us to take the hand we're dealt with. You can't control what you dealt, and then play it out the best you can.
And so there's so much wisdom in that across every aspect of life, of the things that I have control over and some things I have zero control over. And the idea is to focus on the things I have control over and then to actually take actions that are aligned with what it is that I'm interested in having an influence over.
Right, exactly. That's all we can do.
And when it comes to planning, where is the nuance with that? Accepting what is and what is not, but also it's not being complacent with certain things. It's also pursuing more when it comes to money and assets and accumulation. Am I off base?
Well,
Is
no,
there a
you're
conversation to be
right. I
had?
mean, human nature is always in pursuit of more. But that's not a good idea for people who want to be successful in life, generally speaking, whether it's, and I don't measure that definition of success by a particular sum of money or a particular accumulation of material things. I measure that by an equation, a simple equation. What do I have? And subtract from that, what do I want? And if that equation doesn't have a positive result to it, and if what I have minus what I want doesn't leave me a positive number, so that I never have what I want, I'm constantly moving the goalpost, then I'm never going to be happy. The problem is the mind doesn't get satisfied with the new house or the more money, because what we really want, what the human body is really craving, is not that new house or new car or more money. It's craving the dopamine rush that's associated with the expectation of the new car and the more money. And so that'll never be satisfied because addictions are prevalent all the time. So if we want to be happy, I think the best thing we can do is to try to say what I try to teach every new person who's interviewing us, to see if we can help them with their planning and wealth management, is understand, no matter how many friends you have or people you know who have more things than you and more money than you have to internalize one thing if you want to succeed, that you have something that most of those people never can have. And I said, what are you talking about? These people will have more money and more things than me. Enough. A lot of those people around you never have enough. And when you take the equation I define, what I have minus what I want, my expectations, my results minus my expectations. If I use that definition of wealth, there are many poor billionaires. So it's not shouldn't be an endeavor to accumulate as much as I can. It's just, let's define what is it that I need. What's the best way for me to get what I need as I retire someday and stay comfortably retired from the side? What do I have to do? And that's the baseline. And then if I want to leave some legacy to my family, what do I have to do? But it shouldn't always be about more and more and more, because then you have more and more and more, but you were never really happy along the way.
Which sounds so obvious, but so hard for us to actually get there. Or
I always say with
maybe not. Maybe it's easy.
It's easy. It's one of those things that I describe as it's simple, as you say. It's just not easy. And the reason it's simple, as you say, because it's obvious, but it's not easy because of human nature, right? We're always tempted. We never measure our happiness in absolute terms, what I call our internal benchmark versus our external benchmark. What I mean by that is if I'm taking my family to a hotel for the holidays, I can go to a Marriott and I can, I have a family of four. I can get a suite and I can really enjoy the space and have separate TVs and all that, all the kind of things that are internally important to us to enjoy our vacation. Or I can go to the one bedroom at the Four Seasons because that's the external. I want to be able to tell all my friends that external benchmark. We stayed at the Four Seasons over Christmas. And so the more we can focus on what's important to us, and in your one of the things I read that you sent to me, what that you talk about is no one's more interested in us and in our stuff than we are. So there's this kind of this paradox called the man in the car paradox, where a young man was valet parking cars somewhere in California, and a gentleman drives in driving a big red Ferrari. So the young man's impressed. He doesn't know the man who's driving the car, doesn't really even think about that. So the man who's driving the car is probably thinking, hey, everyone's the kids looking at me thinking how cool I am, right? But no, the kid's looking at your car thinking, wouldn't I look so cool if I had that red Ferrari? So nobody's interested. That's the paradox, right? No, we always think that we're doing something to impress people. We're buying the bigger house. I always say we're spending a lot of money either that we shouldn't spend or can't afford to spend to impress a lot of people that usually we don't even like, right? And so if we can take all of those things and take it back to the internal benchmarks, what is it that we want to be happy? We'd find life to be a lot more pleasant, I think, from a financial and happiness standpoint.
I'm 1,000% sure that that's true.
Right.
And
But to
it
your
is.
point, simple, not easy.
Yes, simple, not easy. Is that
Which is
just
one of
with.
our roles. Well, one of our roles as behavioral counselors is to try and make it easier. We're always there on the shoulder, it's the way the angel fighting the devil who's telling the human nature wise to do the wrong thing.
Yeah. Is it age? Is it it's experience? It's certainly relative, 'cause you've always been an old soul. Your wife said you're Miami John since you're 25 years old, but some people will go to their deathbed caring so much about what other people think of them, and then they'll regret that, and that's really, really sad.
And regret really is the toughest, most painful emotion, because long-term regret is one of the few emotions that never goes away, the results of it. So, when you talk about what you just said is interesting. There's a story I heard from this one of my favorite authors, Morgan Housel. He writes The Psychology of Money, and he talks about resume virtues and eulogy virtues, right? So most of us spend our whole life chasing resume virtues. I'm the president of this company. I'm the CEO. I just donated 10 million to this hospital. My name's all over it, right? But when you go to the eulogy, this man was such a great person, anonymously gave to all kinds. That's what we want. What we really want is the eulogy virtues, but we spend our whole life chasing the resume virtues. And it goes back to the same theme we're talking about, right? The internal versus external benchmarks. So if we can just always focus on that or try to, then it's to your point, it's wisdom. I always say data isn't knowledge and knowledge isn't wisdom. Wisdom comes with all the data and knowledge you've accumulated, and then the experience that you've had using the data and knowledge to make things better for yourself, then you've done that for the last 40 years, or I've done it for the last 40 years. We can then help other people who only have the data and knowledge by sharing our wisdom. But a lot of people don't want to accept the wisdom, so unfortunately.
I like that a lot. Data, knowledge, and wisdom, the differences between those things.
Right.
It's like you hear about how goal setting, the verdict is in, right? We know how powerful and important goal setting is, yet only 2% of us have actually written them down. Is this a function of I just need to give myself the space? I need to find my version of looking at the water to clear my head. Is it occasionally? Is this hygiene that must be done consistently? It's better to do it once than to never do it at all. To ask yourself, what is enough? What is my internal versus external?
I think it's painful for a lot of people because it's kind of like how I define what planning is, the exercise of planning. I always say it's a science of choices, right? I'd like to retire by the time I'm 40. Okay, but then you can't have the BMW and the big, beach house and so forth. So it's a science of choices. And when people start to engage in the planning exercise, the goal setting exercise, similarly, they have to then confront that if they're doing it with someone honest, right? And so people don't like that. People don't want to make choices, right? There's this concept in behavioral finance called hyperbolic discounting, where the farther away a consequence is relative to a current decision we might make today, the more we can discount if there's likely to be negative consequences. So someone says, if you keep, eating cheeseburgers in 20 years, you're going to have a heart attack. After the doctor's meeting, I go to the burger place and I have a cheeseburger. So I'll worry about that in 20 years, so far away. And we do the same thing with planning. Well, I understand that you're telling me that if I don't, if I spend 6,000 a month on my apartment instead of 4,000 a month on the one I don't love as much, that I won't be able to retire at 60. But you know what? I'll worry about that when I'm 60, and they spend 8,000 a month, now. So it's not wanting to deal with the pain of having to make the choices involved with the goal setting. That's what I think it is.
I think that that's right. It's what it comes down to, right? It's just making
That's from
those
my
choices.
experience, right? That because that's, there's no other reason not to sit down and deal with goals and objectives and how to get there, other than you don't want to deal with the realities involved with the choices you may have to make to do it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound fun at all. I actually sat
Right,
down and did this
right. And he
planning. You tell me I need to eat
said,
fewer cheeseburgers, live in a less desirable place, drive a less desirable automobile, all
I
for
just had to
some.
tell someone yesterday. I had to tell a client, she said, I'd like to retire by next year. And after I listened to what they want to do, vacation home and so forth, I said, it's 3 years. I was like, really? I said, I can tell you what you want to hear, or I can tell you what you need to hear. I can give you the what I call good sounding advice or the good advice. And oftentimes they're mutually exclusive. So, it's not easy for me either to but that's my job, right? That's what you have to do.
Did they flip the table over and walk out of the room, or?
Nope. At the end they said, we really appreciate it. That's it. I have my objective. It's 3 years and let's shoot for that. And that's it. And then I said, we'll revisit it in a year and a half. Maybe we're closer. Maybe the investments did better than we expected. Maybe, there's a potential inheritance. Maybe we don't hope anyone passes away, but maybe we'll inherit some money. We don't know. So let's revisit it in a year and a half. But all else equal, let's assume 3 years. And they were appreciative. You know why? Because now there's no more anxiety associated with, I wish I could do it next year. How do I get? I just spelled it out. You can't. You can't. So let's be realistic and look at 3 years. Otherwise, forget the vacation home. Right. Choices.
The truth shall set you free, or at least set you on the
That's
right
it.
path.
That's it. You want to sleep at night,
I would rather know, even knowing that knowing is going to cause me discomfort over the short term.
That's exactly right. By the way, that's why so many people are make poor investment decisions. We have a human nature bias. It's called an ambiguity bias. We'd rather make decisions that we know have a high probability of not being on a long-term best interest, but we know have less ambiguity involved with the outcomes. So in other words, I'll buy bonds for too much of my wealth because I know it's not going to move around a lot, even though I know in 20 years the bond is freezing every dollar I have. And I'm going to need $2 in 20 years to buy what a dollar bought today. But I don't like the ambiguity involved with investing in great companies for growth because they fluctuate too much. So we accept the choice with the obvious high probability of worse outcome in the long run, because in the short run it comforts us. I can sleep at night. So there's a lot of human nature things going on inside of us that cause us money and otherwise in life to make decisions that are not in our interest in the long run because it comforts us in the short run. What we really want as human beings is we have what's called a loss aversion bias. So the pain of a loss, financially or otherwise, is felt 2 times to 2.5 times greater than the pleasure and equivalent gain is felt pleasurable to us. So what human nature really wants is not, don't give me what financially or otherwise my best choice for the long run. Give me the choice that gives me the lowest possibility of loss in the short run. And oftentimes, again, it's the opposite of what you need for the long run.
I love that. And it's true. Great stuff. Well, Jonathan, you've already given us a lot, but we're ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us, sir?
All right. I kind of gave it to you already, so I'm just going to reinforce it. Is try to live life, and I'm guilty, by the way. I'm be honest with the audience. I don't always live my life this way, but as an advisor, try to live our lives with the focus on the internal benchmarks. Try to find what you want for yourself to be happy, not to impress others, not for other, not what I call. There was a guy named Charles de Montesquieu. In the 1700s, a well-known back then philosopher. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, if all you wanted was to be happy, it would be simple. But what you really want is to be happier than other people, which is always difficult because we deem them to be happier than they are. And he said this in the 1700s. In my view, the personification of what he said is around us every day in Facebook. All you can do on there is you see everybody's great celebrations and weddings and vacations. You never see anything negative. So you begin to think, wow, well, what am I doing wrong? And he said that in the 1700s. And that's the evidence that the human nature is immutable, hasn't changed, never changes, right? Certain things, the way we respond to greed and fear and envy and regret, never changes. So that's my advice. Live your life in absolute terms, not relative to everybody else. Find out what's important to you, pursue those things, and realize that nobody's more interested in your stuff than you are, regardless of how it might appear.
Well, I think that that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on. That is wise, wise wisdom right there. Like, you don't want to be happy. You want to be happier than you think other people are. And
That's it.
what a fool's errand.
Right.
Well, if we could all get to that point, what a wonderful world it would be. And if the election just would have gone differently, then we would have been happier. Who knows?
Who knows, right?
I'm of course just kidding. So
No, of
focus on the
course.
internal and try to worry less about the external and focus more on the internal.
That's it.
I
We're on
like
the same page. All right.
it.
So,
Well,
George,
Jonathan,
thanks for having me today.
yeah, I
Appreciate
really appreciate you coming on and sharing a lot of wisdom with us today. So I'm grateful for that. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you and your firm?
Sure, thank you. So, best place is our website, fusionfamilywealth.com, and our podcast, which is called Crazy Wealthy, which deals with a lot of the topics we talked about today in greater detail. We have two segments. There's the Crazy Wealthy podcast, which is similar to what you and I did today in terms of the venue and interview. That's once a month. And then once every 2 weeks, we've got Fix It Friday, which is we identify a bias, like loss aversion bias. We tell you how to identify it and how to overcome it. So that's every 2 weeks for about 5 to 10 minutes, just me educating everyone. And they can get all the podcasts and all their favorite venues, but crazywealthypodcast.com is also where they can access it.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Jonathan your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to fusionfamilywealth.com and dig into more of Jonathan's professional work and then check out the Crazy Wealthy podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. I know that I very much enjoyed Jonathan's perspective and the way that he talks about money and happiness and all the important things that we're all striving for. So I'm confident you'll enjoy that show as well. Thanks again, Jonathan.
Thank you, George. Okay.
Finally, friendly reminder, Jonathan's touched on this a couple of times. There's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.